Again, I would like to welcome everyone to today's MSDN webcast, User Interface Elements Using Visual Basic .NET, Part 2 of 4. I'd like to introduce today's presenter, Fritz Onion. Fritz is a co-founder of Pluralsight, a .NET developer training company. And without any further delay, I'll turn the floor over to Fritz.
Thanks very much, Tracy, and welcome everyone to today's webcast. As you mentioned, today's topic is User Interface Elements in ASP.NET 2.0. And we'll be using Visual Basic .NET as our language. And this is part two of our four-part series taking place this week. My name is Fritz Onion. I work for Pluralsight, and we do developer training on-site at companies with private classes and at open enrollments all around the world. So please come by and check out our site if you're looking for any training. So here's where we are in the series. This series is actually being offered in parallel in both C# and VB.NET. You're at the VB.NET session in part two right now. And if you want to attend the subsequent sessions, you see them up on the slide here. There's one tomorrow and one Friday, which will conclude the series. I do like to point out at this point that every session does have an accompanying lab that you can work through. And it should be quite useful for you to go away from the session and get your hands on this stuff and try some of these things out. So I encourage you to download those labs, and you should be able to work through them with any version of Visual Studio.NET 2005, even the Express Edition. So be sure to check that out. And we'll give you the URL to download the labs from, as well as any of the demos that we do today at the end of the broadcast. Okay, so the agenda for today, those of you that attended our session yesterday, we had a brief look at a sample application, which was a movie review site. And it used a large number of features of ASP.NET 2.0, including all of the features we're going to be talking about today. So for those of you that attended that session, hopefully you have at least a high-level conception of what I'm talking about when we describe master pages and themes and skins and navigation controls, which are the three topics for today. What we're going to do today is step in and look at each of these features individually, talk about the mechanics of using them, and how you generally apply them to sites that you're developing in ASP.NET 2.0, and just give some sort of general advice on how to incorporate these features into applications that you build. So we'll start off with master pages, looking at the templating mechanism that ships with ASP.NET 2.0. Then we'll take a look at themes and skins, which is a way of incorporating or consolidating, is a good way to look at it, user interface elements of your site, including style sheets and style attributes for your controls in the form of skin files, as well as image and resource directories. And we'll finish up with a look at the navigation controls, the tree view, the menu, and the sitemap path. Okay, so we'll start with master pages. Master pages are a standardized mechanism for defining templates for your site. And by templates, I mean a single top-level file that contains HTML elements that you want to apply to some subset or perhaps all of the pages in your site. Now, this is a very common requirement for website development. You very often will have a common title that you want to include across all the pages in your site, maybe a sidebar, maybe a footer, or some other combination of user interface layout. And that's exactly what master pages are intended to give you, is the ability to define all of those layout features in one place and have them implicitly propagate across any number of pages that subscribe to that template. So that's the mechanism. And people have been doing this for, you know, as long as they've been doing web development for the most part in any environment. And there have been many different techniques of doing this in the past, including server-side include directives in classic ASP, using user controls in ASP.NET. And ASP.NET 2.0 just introduces a more formal mechanism for this. And hopefully, as you'll see, it's a relatively easy thing to get up and running. The mechanics of usage, let's start here. To define the top-level file that you want to use as the template for all the other files, what you're going to do is create a file with an extension of .master. So not ASPX or ASCX, but this is .master. It's a new extension in ASP.NET 2.0. And when you write your master file, you essentially write it like you would any other page, any ASPX page that you might have, you might be writing in your site. So notice this looks very much like an ASP.NET page, with the exception of the directive at the top is master instead of the page directive. So there's a master directive, and then you just lay out your HTML, the body, the form, etc. And the key thing you're going to add to your master page, that you know beyond the standard form elements, is a content placeholder control, one or more content placeholder controls. And the purpose of the content placeholder control is to essentially reserve a location where individual content pages are going to inject their content. So you lay out the page, and you might have some center element or some cell in a table where you want the content pages to place their content. And that's where the control goes. And then individual content pages look more like this. You'll have a standard page directive, like we do with all ASPX pages. Then you'll specify a master page file directive or attribute pointing to the master page that you want to have affiliated with a particular page. And then as soon as you do that, as soon as you write a page that has an associated master page, you're immediately constrained to only having content controls in that page. So you can't actually sprinkle arbitrary HTML in a content page, a page that's wired up to a master. You must have only top-level content controls. And these content controls are mapped onto the associated content placeholder controls in the master page using this content placeholder identifier. So notice the identifier here is the same as the identifier, or the content placeholder ID here is the same as the identifier for the content placeholder control up in the master page. And that's how the association is made. So all of the contents of this content control will be injected into the content placeholder at runtime when these two pages are merged together, these two controls. Now, once you do that, and we'll go off and do a demonstration of this in just a moment, once you do that, you will, one of the immediate benefits is, in addition to just to propagating the contents of the master onto individual pages, the designer also understands master pages. So inside of Visual Studio 2005, if you open up a page that has an affiliated master page, you'll actually see the master page content in a grayed out format, like the slide is showing. And then the content for your page, the one you're actually authoring, will show up inside of a content control at the location where it's going to be injected into the master page. Okay, so that's the idea. You write the template and apply it to your files. Let's go switch out to application sharing at this point, and let me go design a master page for you and show you some of the tools to do so. You might want to hit F5 at this point to maximize your viewing area so you can see the full desktop as we run. Okay, so I'm going to launch Visual Studio 2005, and I'm going to create a new website. And when I create a website here, you have an option for a number of templates available. My first piece of advice is, as you start working with sites that are going to use master pages for most of the pages in your site, you typically want to start with an empty website as opposed to the ASP.NET website. It'll just give you a blank directory, and you can start putting stuff in there. And the reason I recommend this is if you choose the default website template, it'll always put in a default.aspx file for you, which does not subscribe to a master page. So you'll either have to delete that or retrofit it to work with the master pages. So I just find it easiest to start off with a blank, empty website and get things started from there. Okay, let's create a new website called UI Elements to correspond to this session we're going through. And that will just point us to a directory on my local machine here, and we can start working with it. Okay, so the first thing we'll do is add a master page to our website. So I'm going to go into my Solution Explorer, and again, all that's technically necessary is that you have a file with a .master extension. There is a nice wizard for inserting these things, though, so we'll use that. So this is the master page is the template you want to use when you're inserting a new item. And notice down here you have a couple options, including your language and the code separation. So if you want to use CodeBehind for your master page, just like we've used it for standard ASP.NET pages, you can do that as well. And in fact, I'm going to leave that checked because I do want to show you some examples of adding code to a master page in a little bit. So we'll do that. And the other option is to change the name of the thing. You can create as many different master pages as you like and call them whatever you like, as long as they end in .master. I'm going to call this one my site template. just because I'll use it for all of the pages in my entire site. Okay, so here's the master page that was generated. Notice that it looks pretty much like any other ASPX file you might create by using the same mechanism. You've got your standard HTML header or HTML element at the root. You've got a head element. You've got the body, the form, etc. It does automatically inject a content placeholder control for you with a default identifier. I'm going to rename it to my main content placeholder just so it has some more semantic meaning as I look at it in the content pages. And then you can either by hand or using the designer lay out the page. So let me actually switch over to the designer at this point and do a little layout on the site on this particular master page. Again, common things you'll tend to do in the master page, put in some divs or some paragraphs or some tables to define the top level layout that you want to apply to all the pages that are going to subscribe to this. So what I'm going to do is put a table in, and my intent here is to give a standard header and a navigation pane on the left and a footer for all the pages in my site. So I'm going to use this nice little insert table feature of 2005 that has a template option, which will actually spit out a table with a combination of TDs and TRs, et cetera, to generate one of these layouts. And I'm going to choose the header, footer, and sides. So I'll have a three-row table with one column in the top row, two in the middle, and one on the bottom. Good. And then what I'm going to do is take my content placeholder and put it in the location where I want my individual pages to render their content, which in my case will be the center cell of my newly laid out table. Now, just to make sure we're clear on what's going where, let's put some text in each of these cells. So I'm going to say this is the header for my site, or my master page. We'll drop a head, make it big and easy to see. And we'll call this the left pane, perhaps. And again, make that nice and large text. And then finally at the bottom, we'll call this the footer. Again, something that's going to propagate to all the pages. Now, what I have so far is a single content placeholder control, and then I've done the layout surrounding it, right? So pretty common technique to do something like this. The other option you have, or something else you might consider, is you can also add additional content placeholder controls, as many as you need, or anticipate you might need. So what I'm going to do is add one more content placeholder control down in my footer, just to make it possible for individual pages to inject content at another location inside of the master page. So this will be down in the footer as opposed into the main content area. So you can do this, just try to anticipate where content pages might want to inject their content. The way I'm going to do it is grab this content placeholder control in the toolbox, and that'll just drop another one in here. And let's go set the identifier of this guy to be the footer content placeholder. So it, again, has some meaning when we actually override the content in an individual content page. Okay, so there I go. I have a master page all laid out, and I have a pair of content placeholder controls ready to receive content. Our next step is to go create a page that actually is tied into this master page. So a couple ways of doing this. Let me show you sort of the simplest way. There's a nice little shortcut you can use inside of the Solution Explorer. You can just right-click on a master page and use the Add Content Page item. And this will always generate a new page for you named default.aspx, and it'll stick a number in there depending on how many default ASPXs you already have. So it works great for the first one. I tend to only use it for the first one because after that you often want to name your pages something else. So what did it give us? It gave us a new page, default.aspx, and it wired this page up to the master page because of the way I inserted it. So notice we have the master page file attribute in the page directive properly initialized to my site template.master. So that's the association with the master page. Also note there's a title element that was populated implicitly for us. This is a new feature as well that lets you set the title inside of the head element of an HTML page. And if you think about it, this is something that you probably want to take advantage of for a lot of search engines key their indexes off of the titles of your pages. And if you have a single master page like we do here, if you look in the source, notice there's just a generic default title there. And if we left this you know, let's say my UI elements site, if all of our pages had that same title, it wouldn't give us any distinguishing factor among the pages. So keep that in mind, that it's possible to set the title individually on a per-page basis, my home page, by using this title element, which will then be injected into the head element in the when the page is rendered. So then I've also received or been given these two content controls, and notice they've been implicitly mapped onto the main content placeholder and the footer content placeholder. So let me show you the design view. Once you're working with master pages like this, the designer, like I said before, is aware of the master page to content page relationship. So it will show you the contents of the master page surrounding the content controls on your page. And it's pretty easy to see what the whole thing is going to look like when it ultimately goes back to the client. So let's just toss a couple controls in here. I'm going to grab a calendar just because it has lots of stuff to look at. And let's also throw in a text box here. And perhaps a button as well, like so. So a few controls in the main area. And down below, this is our footer content. So let's just put in some alternate text here. This is the footer for page one. Okay. So there we go. And now if I run this page, let's go ahead and try it out. We should see all of this merged together into a single rendering, right? So the client has no perception that you're using master pages because these things all get merged together and render as a single response. So it really has no impact on what people see in the browser. And there we go. So there's my header, there's my left pane, there's my footer, there's my custom content for the footer control, footer content control, and my inner content for the main page is right here as well. Okay, so all merged together. And if you look at the source code here, again, you shouldn't really see any distinguishing factor calling out that this is using master pages, because it's just a server-side implementation of applying templates to pages in your site. Now, let me point out a couple other things here with respect to the content controls and the content placeholders. One thing you might consider doing in your master page is supplying default content. For example, suppose I want to put a footer, and I want that footer to have some standard content on all pages by default. If they don't override it, I could say, this is the standard footer, let's say. And what would happen is if I go to a page like I have here, because I have a content control and I've overridden that content with my own element, that will actually replace the default content to the master page. But let me add another page that's bound to the same master page and show you how we could do something different. I'm going to use the add new item mechanism for injecting a page this time instead of that shortcut I showed you before, just because I want full control over the naming and all the attributes that are set here. So let's call this page2.aspx. And notice one of the options when you're putting a web form into your site is to select a master page, which we're going to select this time. And then you'll be prompted with a master page to map onto, and this will list all of the master pages in your site if you have more than one. And off we go. Now what I'm going to do in design mode is put some content in the middle. So this is page two, let's say. And then here's another option you have, which is for any content control that has some default content in the master page itself, you can actually just revert to or decide to use the content that's in the master page. And the way to do this through the designer is to right-click on the content control and specify default to master's content, and that'll just inherit whatever content was defined there. Notice it shows up in the designer as the standard footer that we typed in earlier in the master page. Okay, so common thing you might want to do. Now, technically, what that did under the covers was it simply eliminated the second content control. So the end result is if you don't supply a content control inside of a content page that maps onto a placeholder in the master page, then it's just going to default to whatever content the master page had, or nothing if there was no content. So that's the mechanism, and the UI and the designer is what you just saw there. Okay, let's add one more page just so I can set up a couple other demos I'd like to do during the rest of the session. This one's going to be page3.aspx, and we'll again choose the same master page that we've been choosing. Now we have a suite of three pages all tied to the same master page, so any changes that are made to the master page will implicitly propagate to all the pages that are subscribed to that master page. Okay, let's go back and look at a couple other features of master pages and sort of talk about their implementation a bit. One thing that people are often surprised at when they first start working with master pages is the actual relationship between master pages and the pages that use them. So in the example I showed you, we had a default.aspx page, and it set its master page file directive or property in the page directive to a particular master page in the site. And in many ways, it feels like the master page is kind of this parent, if you will, to the content page. In fact, the opposite ends up being true, which is to say, when you access a page that is pointing to a master page, that has a master page file directive set, the page itself is going to be constructed in the standard ASP.NET control construction sequence. And what it will do is it's going to take the master page and it's going to inject it as the first control in that page. So technically what ends up happening is the master page becomes a child control of the page, even though, you know, graphically and design-wise, it sort of looks like the opposite is happening. So it's an implementation detail, but it's an important one to be aware of as you start working with these things, because if you find yourself looking for how to access controls in your master page, you're actually going to reach down into your own control hierarchy and look at it that way. So the other interesting thing to note about master pages is they actually inherit, the master page base class inherits from the user control base class. And if you're familiar with user controls, this is what ASCX files turn into in ASP.NET. That's the a way of encapsulating a piece of your user interface that lets you drop it into an individual page. And the reason they did this was because user controls have a lot of the same needs as master pages, right? It's a file on disk, right, an ASCX file, master pages are master files, and it's got a bunch of server-side controls and HTML inside of it, and all of that content is going to be injected into a page at a certain location. So they actually share a common implementation for doing that. So just be aware of that as well. And the way this works, sort of under the covers, is that, like I said, the master page is injected as the first control of the page, and then the controls inside of a content control in the page itself are going to be injected into the content placeholder control as children to it. So you kind of have this nested relationship going on. I'm going to show you a demo that shows exactly how that works. So hold on 1 second, we'll do that. Before we go do the demo, let me just mention one more thing, because I want to include this as well. So along those same lines, if you're working with a master page that has exposed some functionality, either through a property or a method or maybe some public fields, one way to access that information or access those methods is to use the master property of the page class, as we're showing on the slide here. So you can actually reach into your page class and call the master property, which is going to return to you the current master page that has been affiliated with this page. And then you can do some interesting stuff. You can actually reach into the master page and search for other server-side controls that are inside of it. In this case, we're extracting out the HTML form that's inside of it. And then you might do something, you know, dynamically to that control here. Now, if you find yourself doing stuff like this, that is reaching into a master page and calling methods on it or modifying controls, you might consider formalizing it a bit more by exposing these things as public properties and methods, just like you might with any other class, and then adding strong typing to your master page access. And that's what we have on the next slide here. So instead of having that generic master property, like I showed you in the last slide, where it just comes back as a master page type, if you use this master type directive in your page class, that's going to strongly type your master property to whatever master page you associate it with. And that will give you things like IntelliSense when you're inside of Visual Studio, and nice drop-down support for accessing all the fields and properties exposed by that class. So I'm going to show you a demonstration of using all those features, and in addition to the control hierarchy thing. So let's go switch back out to application sharing one more time. Again, F5 is how you can maximize your screen. And the first thing I'd like to show you is that relationship that I was talking about. So what I'm going to do is enable a feature on this page called tracing. Any page you can actually walk up to and just set this attribute on it called trace equals true. And what this will do for you is spit out a whole bunch of diagnostic information after the page is rendered. So I just ran that page, And if I scroll down, notice we have all this diagnostic information down below. So it gives you information about the request that was made and various calls that were made during the page lifecycle. What I'm particularly interested in here, though, is the control tree. So remember that I mentioned when a master page is associated with a particular content page, it injects the master page as the root child control in the page. And you can see that in this control hierarchy here. So notice my page control is the root control. That's my page itself. And then the first control in the page right here, CTL00, is my site template underscore master. That's the actual class that was generated by ASP.NET when it parsed the master page file. And notice that it's rooted there as the first control in the hierarchy. And then we have some standard controls that are part of the master page all the way down to the placeholder. Okay, so there's the placeholder control, and that's the one that's reserving the location for the content page to inject its content. And that's what you see below this guy. So all of the elements of a content control are dropped in as child elements to a placeholder control inside of the master page, which in turn is dropped in as a child to your page. Right, so just be aware of that relationship. That's how these things are sort of wired together once things are hooked up at runtime. Okay, and the other thing I want to show you was the programmatic access to the master page. So let's go try doing something concrete here. I'm going to open that master page back up and do something that is pretty common for a site template, which is let's add some navigation elements. Okay, so I'm just going to throw on some hyperlinks here. These are server-side hyperlinks in ASP.NET, which would give you programmatic access. I'm in the designer here. A useful tip in the designer, by the way, if you're using it to lay stuff out, if you hold the shift key down when you hit enter, that'll inject a break for you in the HTML, as opposed to hitting return or enter without the shift, which will inject a paragraph element. So if you want to control those things. So let's throw in another hyperlink. I'm going to put three on just to navigate among the three pages that I have here. And one more. And then we'll just set those guys to point to all the pages in our site. Okay, so the first one, go bring up the properties and set this guy, the text to home, let's say, and the navigation URL to tildewhack default.aspx. If you haven't seen that tilde syntax before, that's an ASP.NET feature that works with server-side control URLs, URLs, and that's always going to resolve to the root of your site. So it's a useful way of getting a relative path value dynamically generated on the server that always evaluates to the root of your site. Then we're going to have page 2, and the navigation arrow there is going to be tildewhack page2.aspx. And the last one's going to be same thing with page 3. All right. Now, what I want to do is I want to make these links, I want to expose the visibility of these links as a property on my master page so that individual pages can elect to have them turned on or off. Right? And you could certainly do this by going to a page and just drilling into your control hierarchy and finding those navigation control, I'm sorry, those link controls, hyperlinks, and flipping their visibility a bit. But what I want to do is sort of make it a slightly less coupled relationship and expose a public property on my master page. So I'm going to go into the source here. And conveniently, all these links are already inside of a paragraph element. So I'm just going to make that a server-side control so I can talk to it on the server. Give it an ID, links paragraph. And I'm going to go write a property in my code behind file to expose the visibility of that paragraph element. So if I make it non-visible, that should hide all the links. And if I make it visible, it should show them. So let's go flip to the code for this page. And I'm going to define a property here. So public property. We'll call this links visible. And the type is going to be Boolean. And for the getter, we're going to implement it by returning the links paragraph visible attribute. So we're going to return that. And the other way, we're just going to set it. So links paragraph dot visible equals value. Okay, so I just wrote a public property on my master page in the code behind file, which the master page is going to inherit. And any page that wants to should now be able to access the links visible property and set it to true or false based on whether that page wants to have those links visible. Okay, so let's go do that. I'm going to go to my third page now. And let's go to the source code for this page, the code behind file, and just reach into the master. Now before, if I did this without the master page directive, the master type directive, then I would have to go cast it to the right type and retrieve that property. So before I do this, I'm going to go to my third page and add that master type directive that I showed you in the slides. Master type right here, and specify the virtual path equal to the master page that you want this to be strongly typed to. And what that means is once I do that, my master property in the page is going to be strongly typed to the actual master page that's associated with this page. So I should be able to say overrides on load, there's my load event, and we can just go in here and say master.linksVisible. Notice it pops up in IntelliSense, so it's showing me the strong typing for that master. And I can just set it to false, like so. Okay, so now I have a property that I've exposed from the master page, and inside of one particular page, I've actually reached into the master and told it to turn off those links so I don't see them. All right, let's go try running that whole thing, see if it works. So a couple things we should see here. One is the links should show up in every page, right? Because I put these links in on the master page so that they're showing up in default.aspx. If I go to page 2, they should still be there, which they do. They seem to be. That's good. And if I go to page 3, the links should be gone because I went in and set that property. And there's page 3 with no content at all and no links. Okay. So just to give you an idea of some of the things you can do with master pages, pretty flexible design. Easy to sort of apply these things across pages in your site and also add programmatic features to the page, which make it pretty compelling to sort of add, you know, supplemental features to your master pages. Okay, one last thing I wanted to touch on with master pages, which is programmatically setting them. It's technically possible to set the master page in your page code if you want to, instead of having that directive at the top or in addition to, right? You could actually substitute it here. So you can technically do this. The way you have to do this is you have to add a handler for the pre-init event. That's the event that fires just before the init event. And if you set the master page file property in this event, that will take effect and apply that master page when this page gets rendered. If you do it after init, you're going to get an exception. It'll give you an error. It'll warn you that you have to do it before, otherwise it doesn't apply. So this is the only location you can do that. In practice, I found that it's a little bit tricky to really have multiple master pages that you switch in and out of. I usually find that it's simpler really to just build some functionality into your master page to sort of alter its appearance based on some properties you might want to expose. So keep that in mind. This one's a little tricky just because you have to, every master page that maps onto a page must have the same content placeholder identifiers. Otherwise, you're going to get mismatches, and it's not simple to fix. Okay, so that's master pages. Our next topic is themes. And themes are going to give us a way of applying a standard set of user interface decisions or elements across, again, a bunch of pages in your site. The most common term you'll hear used when people are describing themes is to describe them as a way of skinning your site. I like to sort of shy away from that, although obviously my slide hasn't here, but what themes are really about, a good way to think about themes is to think of them as a consolidation of user interface decisions, if you will. So they're not just about doing skinning, although they certainly work well for that. But even if you're not going to create multiple appearances, multiple skins for your site, which is what the term means, don't discard the concept of themes altogether. They're still quite useful, even if you're only going to have a single theme in your site. So keep that in mind. Having said that, this slide is showing you a quick example of how you might have a page subscribe to alternate themes that completely impacts the rendering of individual controls on that page. So in this example, I have a theme attribute in the page directive, which I'm setting to some string, and we'll talk about where that string comes from, and the effect that it will have in this case is to alter the rendering of the calendar and the text and the controls on the page. And this one up here is going to render it as a blue calendar with blue outlines on the controls. So you can certainly do that with themes. Now let's talk more specifically about what a theme is. So technically, a theme is a directory under the app themes directory in your site. So there's a special directory called app_themes. Needs to be at the root level of your site. And under that directory, you can create as many subdirectories as you want, top-level subdirectories, and the name of each of those subdirectories becomes a theme in your application. And that's the string. The actual name of the directory is the string that you need to put into the theme property on those page directives to have it apply. Now, what goes into that directory is what becomes interesting. Inside of the directory you create, so in this case we have basic blue and fall and smoking glass, inside that directory you can place a few things. One is a skin file, and skin files are collections of server-side control declarations in ASP.NET that contain some default attributes. So you might define like a text box that has a default background color and foreground color. You might define a calendar that has a bunch of settings the way you want them to appear on your site. So these are server-side control declarations, ASP.NET controls only. You can also include CSS files. So you can drop a style sheet into your theme directory. And this is really nice. One of the things that happens when you drop a style sheet into your theme directory is that any page that subscribes to that theme will implicitly have a link element injected into its header that pulls in the style sheet. So if you ever had to do that by hand in ASP.NET, you know that, or programmatically in ASP.NET, you know that it's not a trivial thing to do unless you hard code it. So this is kind of nice. It's a dynamic way to get style sheets injected into your pages. And then the last thing that you might include in a theme directory are subdirectories with resources, typically images. But you could also have JavaScript files or whatever other resource type of file you might want to reference. So very often you'll include images, and the advantage of putting an image directory in here is that you can refer to the images in your skin file and your CSS file as local paths, and it will properly resolve those image and other JavaScript references based on the relationship between the two directories. So you don't really have to worry about it. It just works. Okay, let's go and try this. That's the best way to show you, is just go create a theme. So we're going to switch out to application sharing one more time. And let me close out the files I have here. And I'm going to go add a theme. So the way you add a theme through the Visual Studio 2005 interface is just right-click in the Solution Explorer on your site and use the Add ASP.NET Folder menu item. And one of the options here is theme. So that's going to inject a new app_theme directory for you, and it will create a subdirectory under that and ready to be named by whatever you want. So let's just call this my theme. You can call it whatever you want. And then we're going to put stuff in here. So let me start off by adding a CSS file. Okay, one of the first things you'll probably add here might be a CSS file. So style sheet, defaulted to stylesheet.css, that's fine. And let's go ahead and add it. Keeping in mind that this style sheet is now going to be added to every page that subscribes to this theme. So let me just define a couple of silly classes here, just for examples. So these are a couple of CSS classes. I'm going to set the background color of each one to something interesting like lime, let's say. And let's make this one something different, like fuchsia. Okay, so I have a couple of custom style sheet classes ready to go. Now let's go add a skin file. So I have a style sheet there. Let's go drop a skin file in. And like I said before, you want to think of these things as going together. A lot of people ask, why would I use style sheets versus, or why would I use themes versus, or skin versus style sheets? They're really two very different things, right? The skin file defines properties for server-side controls, and the CSS file is sent to the browser and applies cascading style sheet options to HTML elements that are rendered to the client. So let's drop a skin file in and take a look at that relationship. It's pretty common practice to name your skin file the same as your theme, although not required. And it's not too often that you'll have multiple themes, multiple skins. So here's a skin file. And by default, there isn't any IntelliSense or designer support here, although there is a link for enabling IntelliSense, apparently. But By default, you kind of have to throw these in yourself. If we create a text box, run it equals server, and you don't put an ID in here, so that's the one thing you don't do. But then we can set the CSS class. So I'll just reference the CSS style that I just wrote and automatically apply that to my text box. Okay, so that's one way to do it. Let me show you another example. Let's go bring up my default.aspx file that has a calendar inside of it. And if you're working inside of an ASPX file, you get the nice, all the IntelliSense and the designer support. So this is often a good place to go experiment with the styles that you want to have included in a skin file. And I'm going to use this nice little auto format feature to change the appearance of the menu of the calendar. And what I can do is then go back into my source mode and grab out the calendar with all of that, all of those styles set to make it look like that. And then I can actually just drop that calendar into my skin file. Now, skin decorations, again, can't have IDs, but everything else is fine. So what will happen now is any page that has this theme applied, if it has an instance of the calendar control on it, will automatically pick up all the styles that I have defined here. Okay. All right, so let's go try applying this thing now. So I'm going to go back to default.aspx. And for one thing, my calendar can now be reduced to a simple entry like this with no attributes, because I'm going to pick up all those styles from the skin file. And now let's apply the theme. So theme equals my theme. And now this page should be subscribed to that theme, so it should include the style sheet. It should have a text box defaulted to the foo CSS class, and it should have a calendar pick up all the styles that we defined in the skin file. So let's try giving that a run. See if things look like we expect. Looks good so far. So there's my calendar that's been stylized based on the skin. And there's my green text box down here, lime green, showing up. Everything looks good. Okay, so that's kind of how themes fit into the picture here. Again, it's just a subdirectory under app themes. You place a skin file with a bunch of server-side control declarations. You can place a style sheet. The one thing I wanted to show you is how that style sheet was brought in. Obviously, it was brought in because you saw the green text box, but if you go look at the source here for the page, at the very top, you should see this link that's been injected. Right? So it implicitly adds that style sheet link into the head element of your page and brings in the style sheet again. And this applies to all pages that are subscribed to this theme. Okay, so you don't really have to do anything special to get that working. Now, the one other thing I want to show you is very often with a theme like this, what you want to do is just apply it across your site, the whole thing, not just one page like I've been doing. And the way to do that is to add a configuration file. So go to your web configuration file when you're adding a new item. And inside of your web configuration file, go under system.web here, add a pages element, and you can apply a theme. And this will then apply to all pages in your site that don't explicitly opt out of it. So a local directive will always override whatever you have here. But this, by default now, every page in my site will subscribe to that standard theme. Then you have a single place to come back and change it very easily too. Okay. So pretty common practice. Nice way to get a single theme applied across the entire site. Okay. So talk about a couple other things with respect to themes here. Much like master pages, if you want to programmatically change the theme, you have to do it early on in the page lifecycle. Specifically, you have to do it in the pre-init event of the page, before init fires. And the way you do it programmatically is you just set the theme property on your page class and give it the name of the theme you want to apply. And that will take place, and that will be applied across all the controls in your page. And the way I just showed you right here, again, very common, is to set it globally in your configuration file. It's important to note that you can also disable themes. So if you're writing a page and you're already subscribed to a theme, but you don't want your calendar to look the way the theme has it defined, you can always use this attribute in your control, enable theming, and set it to false. And that will opt you out of the default set of styles that are defined for that theme. Now, there's one other decision you might want to make or contend with, which is by default, when you use the theme property on the page class or the configuration file, all of the properties you define in your skin files will actually override the properties that you might have defined locally on the page. If you don't want that behavior, if you want your local properties to always override what's in the skin file, there's another attribute you can use called style sheet theme. So these both do essentially the same thing, right? Theme and style sheet theme. You can only use one. But if you use style sheet theme, it's going to be applied before the controls on your page have their settings initialized from the markup on the actual ASPX page. Whereas if you use the default theme application like we did, the theme is applied after the markup settings are initialized. So that's the only difference there, depending on what you prefer. And again, you can exempt controls individually. You can also exempt pages. If you happen to have it set globally, you can always go into an individual page and opt the entire page out of the theming scheme. Okay, one more thing to mention with respect to themes. The question often comes up, you know, could I have multiple instances of the same control in a skin file? And the answer is yes, but with a caveat. You can't have multiple text boxes, for example, without using this special feature called a skin ID. And that makes sense if you think about it. If we had multiple declarations of a text box, then ASP.NET wouldn't know which one to use on a particular page. But what you can do is you can define one text box with the default set of attributes, and then you can define another one and use the skin ID. And the skin ID, the way you apply that is when you actually put a text box on your form, you use the same attribute. You use skin ID, and if I said strikeout on the form, it would then pull the attributes from that particular declaration in my skin file. So it is possible to do this. It takes a little extra step in your class, but a pretty common tech. It's very much like applying a CSS class in many ways, right? But again, it's all on the server. So a way to subscribe a particular control to a particular set of styles that you have defined. Okay, so we have one more topic here, which is the navigation controls. Again, all these features we're looking at today are very much a sort of a codification of techniques that people have been using over the last several years with both classic ASP and ASP.NET. People have already been building their own mechanism for theming and their own mechanisms for master page templating and for navigation controls. And what ASP.NET 2.0 has done is sort of brought these into the framework and made them standard features and standard controls. So you see a lot of that in this release of ASP.NET, sort of higher level components that make it easier to implement standard techniques across your sites. So navigation controls are exactly that. They're a standard set of controls that make it easy to add navigational structure to your site, navigational interfaces to your site. There are three controls that fall into this category. One is the tree view. That gives you a standard hierarchical rendering of tree with nodes on it. Another is a menu, which gives you a standard menu rendering. Very flexible, actually. Both static and dynamic menu types are available, and it's very customizable in the way it appears and is drop down, etc. And then finally, a sitemap path is a breadcrumbs implementation, so standard little trail that shows you where you are in the navigational structure with hyperlinks to get back to places where you came from. All three of these controls, typically you'll map onto something called a sitemap provider, which draws its navigational information from an XML file in your site called web.sitemap. So there's a standard XML file called web.sitemap. You put in the navigational information and drive these controls from that. So let's go off and do one more demo here, show you how to use the navigation controls. And again, just get a feel for how to put these things together. So I'm going to start by adding a navigation file, so a web.sitemap file to my site. So I'm going to drop in here and choose the sitemap template that's defined. And notice it's going to generate a file called web.sitemap. And what it will do is pre-populate that file with several XML elements that you can sort of infer the schema from. So there's a root-level sitemap element, and then there's a collection of sitemap nodes, which can be nested arbitrarily deep, depending on how you want the navigation relationships to work. So I'm going to set my site up here with a URL. This is going to be default.aspx. This one is going to be page1.aspx. And you just add more of these elements, you know, by hand if you wanted to add additional ones, with nesting if you wanted. Given the title, this is what's going to show up in the tree view and the menu and the sitemap path. So homepage and page 1 and page 2. And then the description will show up in a tooltip if the user hovers over one of the elements. So you can put lots of text here if you want to describe something more carefully. These aren't particularly useful descriptions, but just to give you the idea. Okay. So there's my navigational information, and I need to correct this. This should be page 2 and 3, not 1 and 2. So now I have the data for the controls to drive themselves from. And again, the default sitemap provider will look for this file and just use that. So if I go to my master page, a very common place to do this is go into your master page to add some of these navigation elements. And let's just switch to design mode to see where we are. And the first thing I'm going to do is drop in a sitemap path. So if I scroll down to the navigation section of the toolbox, you'll notice we have those three controls here, the sitemap path, the menu, and the tree view. So I'll throw a sitemap path up here first. And notice that's going to give me the rendering of where we are in the navigational structure. And all of the preceding nodes are going to render as hyperlinks. So you can easily click on those to get back to where you came from. And then I'm also going to drop in a menu up here. Now, the sitemap path is sort of unique in the sense that it is implicitly bound to the sitemap provider. So you don't have to do anything about binding it. And the reason for that is it's really designed only for use in this context, for the navigation context. For the menu, however, you might use this for other things too. So it's a more generic control that you can bind to any hierarchical data source. So you have to do one more step for the menu to actually get it wired up to that file. We have to set up a new data source, and the data source we're going to choose is the sitemap data source that automatically wires into the sitemap provider that will go read that XML file that we wrote. All right, so the menu should be all set up now. Let's actually choose a slightly different format for the menu just to show you some of the flexibility we have here. Nice colorful might be good. And one last thing, let's throw a tree view on the left-hand side here. We're going to have some redundant navigation information, but just to demonstrate it all. And the tree view, again, is a generic control that can be bound to any hierarchical data source. But I'm going to map it onto the same sitemap data source that ties into the sitemap provider that goes and looks in the XML file. Okay, and again, you can change the format of this guy. Quite a few options with the tree view, all the way from XP Explorers to MSDN to Windows Help. Let's choose a simple bulleted list rendering for our example. And we're good to go. Okay, so I've written the sitemap file. I've dropped on three instances of navigation controls onto my master page. And without really doing anything else, we should actually have navigation working. We should have tracking working. All of them should keep track of, you know, based on the URL that the request was made to, should indicate which page you're currently on. So let me go ahead and run this and just show you how things are synchronized based on that navigation information. Okay, so there's the breadcrumbs right here, the sitemap path set to the home page. Here's the menu. Its default rendering is a DHTML menu that pops up on a per-level basis. You can change that to be all static. You can make the drop-down vertical versus horizontal. Lots of flexibility here. And notice if I click on page 2, I'm driven down to page 2. Notice my tree view is staying in sync with me down here. And I can click on page 3, go back to the home page. And if I'm on a particular page, I can also use my breadcrumbs or sitemap path control to drill back to the previous page that I came from. So quite a bit of functionality you get there just by providing ASP.NET the information about the navigational structure of your site, and then tying in that data to these three navigation controls. And you can obviously use some subset of them if that makes more sense for your application. Okay, let's go talk about a couple other features with respect to these guys. So I do want to emphasize that all three of those controls that I just showed you, I had tied into something called the sitemap provider. And the sitemap provider, by default, is initialized to something called the XML sitemap provider that goes out and looks for the web.sitemap file at the root of your directory. This is completely pluggable. This is a standard model that you'll see a lot in ASP.NET 2.0, where controls talk to this intermediary class called a provider, which is pluggable. So you could actually go in and write your own derivative of sitemap provider, plug it into the configuration file and redirect this to retrieve the data from somewhere else, say a database, for example. So just because you this is driving itself from a static XML file. Don't necessarily throw out this feature, because you can actually rewrite that backside pretty easily. And then we looked at three controls. So the sitemap path control gives you this breadcrumb sort of implementation, tracking where you are and giving you navigation hyperlinks to go back to previous pages you've been visiting. Again, this guide maps directly onto the sitemap provider. There's no intermediary data source like there were for the other two. And it assumes the presence of a provider in place. Tree view control. Keep in mind this is a generic tree view implementation. It's got a wide set of features, very customizable UI. It even has built-in support for doing AJAX-style data retrieval. So lots of nice features in this control. And you don't have to tie it to a data source, the sitemap data source. You can use any arbitrary XML data source. But what we did in the sample was we tied it to our sitemap data source, which mapped onto the same provider that was used by the sitemap path control, as well as the menu. And then finally, the menu control. This is what it looked like. Again, lots of properties in this menu control. You can pretty much construct, turn this menu into any menu that you might have written in HTML before, with DHTML pop-ups and pop-downs and all that. So pretty flexible implementation. And again, you can map this onto any arbitrary XML data source or the sitemap data source like we demonstrated today. All right. That brings us to the end of our second session here. So we looked at master pages, a standardized implementation of adding templates to your site. So you have a top-level way of defining the look and feel for any number of pages in your site. Themes and skins give you a nice way of creating a pluggable UI by unifying images, cascading style sheets, and server-side control styles using skin files. And then a new set of navigation controls that make it pretty easy to put together navigational interfaces on your site, including menus and trees and the breadcrumb sitemap path behavior. Very flexible implementation that's provider-driven and easily customizable as well. Okay, as I mentioned at the beginning, we do have a lab associated with this module, and you can download that lab right now if you go to pluralsight.com/fritz/webcasts.aspx, and I'm also going to place the demos that I've been working through in this session up at that site, and I will also have a version of the slides in PDF format you can download, or you can print those directly from your live meeting environment right now if you'd like to. All right, and with that, I will turn it back over to Tracy to go through the questions and answers and survey, and I'll start looking at some of the questions that have accumulated here.
Okay, and thanks, Fritz. And he is right. For more information, you can print a PDF of today's session. To do that, just go to the File menu in your navigation bar. And like you said, we will be getting to the questions and answers shortly, so do please feel free to submit your questions now. Also, I will be posting a survey in just a moment. Please do take a minute to fill that out for us. We do appreciate any feedback you have. For any upcoming or previously recorded webcasts, you can go to www.microsoft.com/webcasts. Or if you have any webcast content ideas, please follow this link here. We would love to hear from you. Today's webcast was presented using Microsoft Office Live Meeting. You can get a free 14-day trial by visiting this link. And for attending today's live webcast, you are automatically entered in to win this 40GB MP3 Windows Media Player if you fill that survey out for us. That gives you a little incentive to do so. I'll go ahead and post the survey and hand the floor back over to Fritz so he can wrap up with some questions.
Great. Thanks, Tracy. Let's see. Someone had an observation. That if you go to this URL, one of the MSN Magazine features, there's a SQL sitemap provider. Yeah, there's a good article by Jeff Prosize on building a SQL sitemap provider. And the question is this easily implemented? Yeah, absolutely. If you grab that code, I've run it myself. It's pretty straightforward to inject the schema into your site and or your database and then use that to drive it. So definitely check it out. And I'll just respond globally here so everyone can see that URL you posted. Let's see. this question about any graphical design webcast that will help you with style. Good question. That's a good question to pose for the webcast organizers. If we have any style guideline webcasts coming up, I'll try to forward that along. Let's see, a question about master pages. Can you have more than two? Yes, absolutely. You can have as many master pages as you want. you basically have to decide which pages in your site subscribe to which master pages. But beyond that, there's no restriction in how you set up how many master pages you set up. And now here's another question: can a master page be a child of another master? And child's not quite the right term, but you can definitely have meta master pages, if you will. So you can have a master page that has a master page file attribute set to another master page. And then that guy would have content elements, and inside of its content elements, you would have additional content placeholders. So yes, absolutely. the one caveat to that, by the way, I should mention, if you are using nested master pages like that, they don't show up in the designer. It fails to render. So it'll work fine at runtime, but the designer just won't be able to show it to you. Question about the content placeholder. Does it have to be inside of a web form? In general, yes. I'm not sure it's technically required, but almost you're going to run into issues if you try to put most any ASP.NET controls outside of a server-side form control. So yes is the simple answer. Question about the DHTML menu. Does that work across browsers? Yeah, it actually works quite well across all modern browsers, including Firefox, Opera, all the big players today. Question about overriding a master page. So how do you override a master page? Well, it depends on what you mean. If you mean replacing the master page, then you have to use that technique that I described where you set the master page file in the pre-init handler on your page. If you mean changing some content, then you can use the other technique I showed, which was to expose some property that lets you modify the appearance in some way. So those are the two techniques I'd recommend. Someone asked about changing the metadata like you can the title. Yeah, good question. The head element of the master page is already marked as a server-side control. So what you could theoretically do is expose properties in your master page and have those add additional children to the head element inside of the master page. So I think that would be the technique I would use. Let's see, a question about front page. Can you easily edit content files in front page? That's a good question. The last I knew, front page supported the ASP.NET server controls, but I don't know if it's been updated for 2.0 or not. If it's been updated for 2.0, then I'm sure you can use it no problem to edit content pages. But I don't have the latest word on that. If you can't today, I suspect you will be able to in a future release. So someone else asked a question about the meta keywords and description handles master. Again, if you can certainly hard code those in the master, but if you want to change them on the fly and on a per page basis, then you'd have to take advantage of the fact that the head element is marked as run at server, and you just have to add additional inner text to that head element, and you could do that by exposing a property or writing some function to inject it. All right, and still a number of questions, but I think I'll take the rest of these just typing in answers so everyone can see them, and we'll have a nice log of the answers as well. So I think we can conclude the audio session. I'll just stay online here answering questions for a little while.
Okay, great, Fritz. I want to extend a special thanks to Fritz for presenting today, and also thanks to the audience for attending today's MSDN webcast. This does conclude today's session. The audience may now disconnect from the audio portion of this presentation. We will stay on to answer questions via text. Thank you.